Welcome to the Speaking Podcast. You can find all our episodes on speakingpodcast.com. We're also on BitChute and YouTube. I'm also a podcasting coach, as I've got four other podcasts, the Awaken Podcast, Learn Polish Podcast, Meditation Podcast, and the Crypto Podcast, and all can be found on roycon.com. Today, my guest, fellow podcaster in Tennessee, please welcome Grant Baldwin.
Thanks, Roy. Appreciate you letting me hang out with you today. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, looking forward to it. So I suppose the first thing to do is let the listeners know who's Grant.
Yeah, most importantly, I'm a husband and father. I'm married to my high school sweetheart. We got three daughters, so it's me and a house full of women, which is the absolute best. I enjoy it most days. And in terms of work, I've been in the speaking industry most of my career. So I've been in the speaking world about 15, 16 years and started as a full-time speaker. Was doing 60, 70 gigs a year all over the country, primarily here in the US. And had a lot of people who were asking me like, hey, I want to be a speaker. How would I go about doing that? And so a few years ago, we started a training company called the Speaker Lab, where we teach people how do you find and book paid speaking gigs. And so that's the core of what we do today. Spend a lot of time working with speakers and working with our team and helping people understand the ins and outs of all things speaking.
Excellent. So before we get into, obviously, you know, your speaking is no problem to you, but was it always like that? You know, Grant, as a young man, what was your journey?
Yeah, I think actually even early on, I remember still being nervous about the idea of speaking, whether it's going to be, you know, in a public speaking class or something like that. But I really enjoyed it. And I felt like it was something I was decent at. So in fact, in high school, I was really involved in my local church, and my youth pastor really had a big impact on my life. And so I went to Bible college. I was a youth pastor for a little while and then worked at a church where I had a lot of opportunities to speak. And again, it just gave me a lot of reps. It gave me a lot of at-bats and just chances to speak and feel like, okay, I think there's something there. I'm not the best. I'm not the worst. And I would love to do more of this. And so I think that's a big misconception with people who are interested in speaking is that, you know, the best speakers in the world, you know, they never get nervous and they never have butterflies. And like, I don't think that's the case at all. I think a lot of times people feel those nerves and those butterflies. And that's not necessarily a bad thing at all. And so, I felt some of that early on and still feel some of that today.
Excellent. So I know, because I was checking out the podcast and you've something as a 431 episodes. We're both in the top 0.5%, which is good for both of us. And because there's not just you doing it, you've got other people that are actually speaking as well. So you might just tell me the podcasting journey, because like 431, that's a lot of episodes.
Yeah, we've done quite a few for sure. And so when the podcast started, it was pretty much all me. And I did a mix of interviews with other guests and people who are in the speaking industry, people who are speakers or people who are work with bureaus or agents or something like that. And then also did a lot of solo shows, but then also started doing some more where we were having like the same kind of recurring people where we'd, you know, me and someone else from our team perhaps would riff on some different topics or talk about, you know, speaking fees or speaking websites or, you know, virtual speaking right now in a pandemic world. So we have done a variety of different formats and topics, but about 400 episodes all about speaking is a lot of free content out there.
And how did you find doing the solo shows? Because I always find that a bit strange. And just on that, I was listening to Clubhouse. I don't know how long Clubhouse is going, but at an early stage.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was comfortable at speaking at that stage. But I found because it was a new medium, I got very nervous for the first three or four times that I was speaking to, you know, to groups on it. And just as a solo, I just found it a bit strange. Just wondering for you how it was.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't enjoy doing a solo episode. So in fact, at the time of this recording, we're coming up on our 400th episode. And so we were talking with the team of, you know, what we're going to do with that episode. And they said, hey, why don't you share some of your top tips and lessons? And I was like, I can, but like, I don't want to do it by myself because I don't think it's a good episode. I don't think it's not nearly as enjoyable for me. I think it's a lot more fun to have someone that you can, you know, bounce things off of and riff and go back and forth, ask questions to one another. And I think it's more interesting to listen to a conversation than it is to just listen to a monologue. So yeah, I would totally agree with you. I definitely would prefer having someone else on the show with me rather than doing a solo episode.
Perfect. So the Speaker's Lab, you might tell me a bit about it.
Yeah. And so when we started about 6+ years ago or so, we started initially with offering a course that basically was just kind of, hey, here's the process for finding and booking gigs. And then as things have evolved over time, we do much more group and one-on-one coaching today. We do a lot of done with you, done for you. So we help create your website. We help create your demo video. We get speaking leads specific to you and what it is that you're looking to do. And so one of the best ways to describe what we do, it would be we don't catch fish for you, but we'll teach you how to fish. Meaning a lot of people come to us saying, can you just book me gigs? You know, I'm looking for a bureau. I'm looking for an agent. And the reality is like 99% of speakers don't need a bureau, don't need an agent, and bureaus and agents aren't going to be interested in 99% of speakers. And so it certainly feels like it's simpler, like, oh, just find someone else to do the hard marketing and selling, but like, it's just not the way it works. And so one of the best things that speakers can do is take ownership of their own speaking journey and truly treat it like a business. And so versus just like, you know, I'd love to do some speaking gigs on the side, and that's fine if that's all you want to do. But if you really want to make a living from this and make a good income, then you have to treat it like a business. And so that's the core thing that we teach is how do you consistently find and book gigs and build a speaking business.
And I think like when you're whether having a PA or an agent to do for it, I'd say your conversion rates when you're doing it yourself, because even if you're talking to people and they kind of give you the objections, because of your own experience, then you can actually explain why you'd be better. Whereas an agent really won't do that for you.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And I always tell speakers, like, no one can sell you better than you. And because of what you just described there, Roy, where you are able to build these relationships and connections. So for example, like right before, you know, we hit record here, we're talking about where I live in Tennessee and, you know, any connections that we would have. And when you're passing that off to a third party, it's harder to make those connections. Cause at the end of the day, like you're in a human to human business, right? You're trying to build a relationship, a connection with an event planner or a decision maker who's considering hiring you. And we're trying to build that know, like, and trust. And so it's just hard to have someone else do that for you. So I think, you know, building those relationships with potential decision makers and you doing that yourself definitely goes a long way and is a lot more effective than trying to have someone else do it.
And I don't know, I do have the same problem, but like I have a kind of pre-interview form that I get people to fill out. And it's different if they come from a platform because you get some information, but I don't like when there's an agent doing it. And I always write to them, please get the speaker to do it, because they will write something that's not on the typical platform, or they've already sent it. And all they're doing is copying and pasting. And when there's an agent trying to get a certain speaker and you go, oh, he'd be good, I always write down, please ensure the speaker writes that, because I know straight away they've just cut and pasted. And, you know, like when you fill out something and I'll ask, what would you like to discuss? Or a few little different things, but there's one key point on that, and that could end up being the best part of the conversation that you'll miss out through an agent.
Yeah, totally agree. So, I mean, at some point as the business grows and evolves, and if you're getting to a point where the demand for your speaking services exceeds the supply and the number of gigs that you want to do, then yeah, absolutely involve other people or have an agent or a bureau. But again, that's not going to be applicable or relevant for a very, very high percentage of speakers.
Exactly. And just curious, because with the Speakers Lab, you've got your own separate website then for you. Do you have the link for that as well that goes to the other one, or do you try to keep them as two separate entities?
I think they're definitely separate entities. It kind of depends on what people are looking for. So when I got started as a speaker, you know, all I had was my main speaking site, grantbaldwin.com. And that's all I was trying to point people to. Was just trying to book gigs. Like that's all I was focused on. But then when I started doing some of the training stuff, and then when we started the Speaker Lab, we created two separate sites because I really wanted to create something that wasn't, that's not dependent on me. Like I recognize with the Speaker Lab, I'm the face of the brand and the face of the company. So totally get that. But we've got at this point about 28, 29 team members. And so there's a lot more people beyond just me. And so I don't want to be the bottleneck of the company. So we're super intentional about creating a separate site, a separate brand, a separate identity. Now they point back and forth. So if someone comes to the Speaker Lab and they say, hey, we want to hire Grant to speak, it's probably better to send them over to grantbaldwin.com. But if someone comes to grantbaldwin.com and is saying, hey, I want to learn how to be a speaker, then what they really need to do is go over to the Speaker Lab. So they certainly cross promote each other, but it kind of depends on like what someone's looking for.
And I know that you've been featured in Forbes, Inc., Entrepreneur and the Huffington Post. Is that regarding the Speaker Lab? Are you as the speaker or a combination?
I think a bit of both, probably more the Speaker Lab. So I think that, you know, today I'm definitely probably more known like in certain circles for the Speaker Lab than for me personally. I've never been super intentional on building a personal brand. I'm a pretty quiet, introverted person. I enjoy being with people, but I also am just totally comfortable just to be home with my family. And so there's certainly a lot of upside to building a personal brand, but it's nothing that I've spent a ton of effort or energy into. I'd much rather people be familiar with the Speaker Lab than be familiar with me.
And for getting featured on these different magazines, is it something that you get a PR firm, or is it just something that they picked up on and reached out to you?
Yeah, we've never worked with a PR firm. And so some of it is just relationships or, you know, I've had with people in the media or someone who has reached out to us. But yeah, there's nothing intentional that we've ever done to try to get media. And again, I think just in general with business, there are plenty of things that work, but doesn't mean you can do all of them. So for example, I'll give you an example. A couple of years ago, I was interested in getting into real estate investing. And I was talking with a buddy of mine who has done a ton of real estate investing, knows all the ins and outs of it. And so I remember sitting down with him, we were getting together and I said, okay, I'm interested in real estate investing. You have all these different types of real estate investing. You have single family homes and multifamily homes and Airbnbs and raw land and commercial properties and on the list goes, right? And so I remember asking him, I said, which one is best? And he said, yes. I was like, what does that mean? Like, that's not helpful. And he's like, they all work, you know, but what you won't find is someone who's trying to do all of these things. And the same thing is true with building a business, right? There are people whose entire business is built on PR campaigns and doing media, and people whose entire business is built upon social media, and people whose entire business is built upon podcasting or blogging or speaking or doing a book. And like, yes, they all work, you know, but what you typically don't find is someone who's trying to do all of those things. And so I think we definitely would fall into the camp of let's do one or two things really, really, really well. And I fully recognize as a, you know, as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, there are absolutely ways that we're leaving money on the table. And I'm okay with that. There's things that we could be doing. You know, we don't do masterminds. I don't do any one-on-one coaching. There's things that people have asked us to do. And like, could we do those? Sure, absolutely. But, you know, do we want to do those at the detriment of what we are already doing and what's already working? And so, could we do more PR stuff? Sure. Could we do more social media stuff? Sure. Could we do more personal branding stuff? Sure. But I also know like what we're doing right now is working. And so there's not a huge urgency or need to.
And I think this, especially for an entrepreneur, because I know that I go through phases where sometimes I take on too much. And it's when you kind of go, what's the most important thing? And you just zone in on that. You get so yep. much done because you're, you know, you can do 50 things, but you're not really doing them. The best thing is to, you know, have like two main core items or maybe three and just put all your energy into that. And you'd be a lot more successful.
Yep. Yep. Totally agree. And I think that that's a big reason. We've had some level of success with the Speaker Lab and just in general, I think is the, I've been in the speaking industry for a long time and it's not like I've done, okay, I'm going to be in the speaking industry and then I'm going to bounce over and do something with e-commerce, something totally unrelated. And then I'm going to be, you know, open a local brick and mortar store doing something else totally different and like just bounced around from thing to thing to thing. And like, it's easy for entrepreneurs to be, you know, caught up in these shiny object syndrome and you're just kind of bouncing the red ball from thing to thing to thing, but like also just saying like, no, like we're in this for the long haul. We're going to be at this for a long time. I think like with the Speaker Lab, there's people who have reached out before and is like, hey, I'd love to work with you guys, but the timing isn't right. And I always just say like, cool. Well, like we're not going anywhere. So we'll be around versus like, sometimes it's, people that are, I'm going to try this speaker thing for, you know, a few months, then I'm going to try something different for a few months. I'm going to try something different. Like I know, a big reason for our success is just like being focused, like solving one specific problem versus trying to do a whole bunch of different things.
Exactly. And in the virtual world then, because obviously everybody in the world has experienced that over the last 2 years, what kind of things have you learned? What tricks can you kind of share with people?
Yeah. And so actually, this is going to sound weird, but the pandemic has been one of the best possible things for the speaking industry. And I'll color that in a little bit. So pre-pandemic, virtual speaking wasn't really a thing. Nobody, event planners didn't really book virtual speakers. Speakers weren't doing a lot of virtual gigs. So it was just kind of this thing that kind of existed, but nobody really took seriously. Well, then the pandemic hits and all of a sudden, like there's no live events, like everything literally just comes to a screeching halt. And all of a sudden there are no other options except for virtual. And so everybody who'd kind of been on the sidelines with virtual, everybody all of a sudden, everybody jumps into the pool. And at that point, like virtual becomes a very viable option. And so what we've seen, what we anticipated happening, what we've seen played out is that now that, you know, each passing day, we're coming out of the pandemic more and more and more, then, we see live events have come back with a vengeance. People love being together. Like there's nothing that replaces or can compete with being together with other human beings in a room. But what we're seeing though, is they're not coming back in replacement of the virtual events that existed previously during the pandemic. They're coming back in addition to, meaning that means there's a lot more events that were not available before, but now because there's in-person events, there's virtual events, there's hybrid events. We see a lot of speakers who are maybe speaking at something live, but it's also being streamed to a virtual environment. We're also seeing where speakers may go speak at something live or in person, but then do, let's say, 3 months of follow-up, three follow-up sessions over the next 3 months virtually. And so there, let's take what we talked about in this in the in-person training or session or workshop, and let me help you implement it and apply it over the next couple of months. So I think, again, it sounds weird and seems strange. And I know a lot of people were affected, and I know a lot of speakers were impacted from the pandemic. But I think the net long-term is that the pandemic will be really, really good for the speaking industry.
I suppose, especially for those that love to be at home with their family, you know, because before you could be traveling in, you know, 8 months of the year, which isn't great when you want to be close with your kids.
Yeah, I mean, there's absolutely like huge upsides to that. And again, like I said, there's trade-offs. So for example, you know, the Speaker Lab, we're an entirely virtual company. And so we have, like I said, 28, 29 people all over, primarily the US, but we have some international team members as well. And so, you know, we live on Zoom, we live in Slack, and that's where, you know, the company runs and lives. And we have a really, really great and healthy company culture, but we're not going to an office every day. We're not seeing each other every day. And so actually at the time of this recording this past week, we had the whole team come down to Austin, Texas, and we rented out an entire like boutique hotel, had everybody down there, hung out for a couple of days, had a private chef, and like, it was just awesome. We had a really great time hanging out. And so as much fun as we enjoy working together and having the freedom and flexibility and autonomy of a virtual environment, hanging out together in person for a couple of days, just virtual presentation. You can stare at a camera in your home office or in your bedroom or wherever and give a presentation, but it's never going to be the same as being together in person and being able to look people in the eye and give high fives and handshakes and hugs and that sort of thing. So virtual absolutely has a place, but the in-person experience is never going away.
Absolutely. And I like some people that are, you know, they've either started or they're trying to decide, yeah, I want this as a career, and trying to earn money of it, the best way of going about that. They might give some advice on that when they're trying to actually, you know, determine what they should charge and how to start building it.
Yeah. And so what we do is we teach a framework called the Speaker Success Roadmap. It's a 5-step process that makes the acronym SPEAK, S-P-E-A-K. And so I'll quickly just kind of walk that through, and then we can jump in wherever you want. But the S is for select a problem to solve. And I think this is the foundational, most important piece that so many speakers struggle with. But there's two things. You got to be clear on who do you speak to and what problem do you solve. Now, most speakers, because we enjoy speaking, we want to do more speaking. What we tend to do is just spread the net as far and wide as possible. Meaning like, who do I speak to? I speak to humans. I speak to people. My message is for everybody, right? And same thing in terms of like, well, what do you speak about? Well, what do you want me to speak about? You know, I could speak about a dozen different topics, you know, and like that just doesn't work. Like people want a specialist, not a generalist. And so, you know, it's kind of like, let's imagine, God forbid, one of us needed brain surgery. You know, you could go to your local family medical doctor. They have never done brain surgery, but they're a doctor. They went to medical school. They know more about surgery than you or I do. They know more about the brain than you or I do. But if they've never done brain surgery, I don't want that person cutting me up. versus like someone who's like, all I do is brain surgery. I am a brain surgeon. And so if you have a broken leg, I can't help you. If you got a bad cough, I can't help you. If you got COVID, I can't help you. But if you got a brain issue, I'm the doctor that you need. Like that's the person that people are looking for a specialized reason. And that's what you want to be as a speaker versus just being like, I speak to everybody about anything and everything. So that's the S, select a problem to solve.
It's like a jack of all trades, but master of none.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. The next part of the process, the P, is to prepare your talk. And so be really, really clear again on what's the solution that you are providing. Are you presenting that in a keynote or a workshop or a breakout or doing consulting or coaching? And so figuring out like what's the solution that you're bringing to the table. The E is to establish yourself as the expert. Establish yourself as the expert. And that comes down to two key marketing tools that every speaker needs. You need a website and a demo video. A website and a demo video. So in this day and age, if you don't have a website, you don't exist. Like people just won't take you seriously. So you have to have a website and you have to have a demo video. A demo video, think of it like a movie trailer. You know, you take a movie that's, you know, 90 minutes, 2 hours, they boil it down to 2 or 3 minutes. And within those 2 or 3 minutes, you have an idea of who's in it, what's the plot, what's the theme. And the goal of a movie trailer and the goal of a demo video is to make you want to see more. Right. And the event planner, they don't need to watch a 60-minute talk to determine whether or not you're a good fit. Like they just need to see a couple minutes. And especially if they're looking at you and 3 or 4 or 5 other possible speakers and they're picking one speaker, they don't have time to watch 5-6 hours worth of video footage. Like they're going to watch just a couple clips and just kind of get a sense of, all right, who do I want to talk to more? Who do I think is going to be a good fit? And so that demo video is really important. The next part, A, is to acquire paid speaking gigs. Now, this is the part where, again, most of the time we just want to fast forward to Grant, just tell me how do you find and book gigs. But if you don't have the foundational pieces in place first, it's really hard to find gigs. And whenever it comes to finding gigs, you have to be much more proactive than reactive. I think again, a big mistake a lot of speakers make is I just kind of, you know, I have my website, I have my video. Now I sit back and I wait for the phone to ring. And it just doesn't work like that. Like you have to be proactive to continually put yourself out there and build relationships with decision makers. And then the last part of the process, K, is know when to scale, meaning a lot of people who are interested in speaking are also interested in writing a book or doing a podcast or doing coaching or consulting or doing any number of things. And so we always say you can do all the things, but you can't do all the things at once. Something's going to come first. Something's going to come last. So you've got to be really, really clear and specific on what it is that you want to accomplish and how does speaking fit into that. So again, that's kind of big picture there, overview of the speaker success roadmap that we walk our students through.
And with the video then, like, would you encourage people to hire their own videographers that is kind of capturing the best part? Because I know that sometimes they're taking, because I've seen different ones, they're taking the best, what they determine to be the best bits, but it's up to the kind of angle and the camera work of the event that they're creating it. But like, would you encourage somebody to actually get their own guy to come along and video them and get good footage? And then he's, you know, extracting the best 2 or 3 minutes from that.
Yeah, you certainly can. But there's also like, there's going to be people who are like, well, you know, I can't afford a videographer, or I don't even know where to hire one. And so I never want that to be a barrier to entry. You know, we want to make it as simple as possible for speakers to get going. And so a couple of things I would suggest to that. One is going to be that remember that like you're creating version 1.0. And so do your best, do it with excellence, do the best of your ability and improve as you go. Meaning at this point, I've had probably 6 or 7 different demo videos. And so my first demo video is not nearly as good as my current demo video. And so again, work with what you've got, do it with excellence, do it to the best of your ability and improve as you go. My very first demo video was I spoke to a group of about 30 people in a dark room. The audio was bad. The lighting was bad. I borrowed a camera from a friend. I set it up on just a little tripod on the side of the room. And like, that's what I had, you know? And it was enough that a decision maker would be like, okay, I'm willing to give this guy a shot. Whereas again, each demo video got better over time. So that's super important. Also, there's going to be times where, depending on the nature of the event, they may already have a videographer there. And so they may already be shooting and they may have it for their own event and gathering their own footage. And so talking with the event planner to see if you can get some, if you can use that footage, or talking with the videographer, if you can use that footage as well. The other thing that you can do is that you can just use like an iPhone or a smartphone. Like the cameras on phones today are amazing. And so in fact, in one of our our trainings, we walk through how you could record yourself doing a, creating a demo video using two iPhones and using one as a camera and one for recording the audio. And so that's absolutely a possibility. So I think the tools, the resources that are available today, just make it a ton simpler to be able to create a demo video than what it was, you know, 10, 20 years ago.
And when people are trying to get to a certain event and they're not successful, do you encourage people to kind of contact them and go try to get feedback so that they can improve on their hit rate, you know, that they get a better conversion rate?
I think it just kind of depends. I think one thing is just to be like, have some self-awareness of the types of events that you're reaching out to. So for example, if you are, you know, reaching out to events that are let me back up. Look at who they're already hiring. And if it's something where these are speakers that are big, big name speakers that they are hiring and you're just getting started, they're probably not going to hire you, right? So you have to make sure that you are fishing in the right pond and versus like, you know, you're reaching out to people that just, they're not looking for a speaker like you, right? Nothing wrong with you, but that's not what they're looking for. So that's one thing, is just to make sure that you've got, that you are clear on, you're looking for the right types of events. The other thing I remember early on in my own career, when I would reach out to an event planner and they wouldn't book me, but they would book someone else, you know, initially I'd be annoyed or frustrated or disappointed or whatever. I was like, oh man, they booked Roy. Why didn't they book me? But oftentimes these events are like annual events or there's some type of regular cadence to them. And so oftentimes what happens is they don't book the same speaker over and over and over again. So they want new speakers. They want fresh voices, fresh faces to come in. And so I quickly changed my perspective to feel like, okay, they booked Roy this time, but they're not going to book Roy next time. And that probably means that Roy is one less competitor I got to deal with. And so there's a greater chance that they're going to work with me. The other thing to remember for speakers is that, again, you're in a relationship business. And so part of what an event planner is hiring you for is to be really, really good on stage. But part of what they're hiring you for is to be good off stage. And what I mean by that is, making their life simple, making like just being good to work with. And I think we've all worked with like vendors before, or we've had experiences before. It's kind of like, you know, if we go to a really nice restaurant and like the food is amazing. I mean, the food is just some of the best meals that you've ever had, but the service is bad. It's slow. They're rude. They mess up your order, that type of stuff. Like eventually you're just like, the food's great, but it's just not worth the experience, right? The same thing is true with a speaker. If you're amazing on stage, but you're just a pain in the butt to work with. And by pain in the butt, I don't mean that you're like some prima donna or diva or anything. I just mean like, you don't show up whenever you say you're going to show up. You're late to things. Whenever they email you questions, they have to follow up with you multiple times to get you to respond. Like you're just a pain in the butt to work with. Like you do not want to be that speaker. You want to be amazing on stage, but you also want to be amazing off stage. And so if they book Roy this year, and then I follow up with them about next year, it also just shows like, hey, I'm on top of it. Like I have my act together and I'm going to keep following up, not in an annoying or pain in the butt way, but following up, just showing like, I'm going to make your life easy when we work together. So that's super important to do.
And what's your thoughts then on, you know, like just say I was there and I talked to him and go, hey, you should get Grant next time. He's actually very good. Do you kind of think collaboration with different speakers is a good idea?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I have a lot of good relationships with a lot of speakers, because to exactly that point, Roy, if you go speak at this year, they're probably not going to have you back next year, but you want to keep building that relationship with them. So it'd be to your advantage to say, hey, I know you're not going to use me next year, but you ought to consider my friend Grant, because think about it, Roy, if you recommend me and then I go speak and I do a great job, you look good, right? And so they're going to keep coming back to you. And eventually after, you know, 2, 3, 4 years, they're going to be like, okay, we've had enough other faces, Roy, we want you back. And so you've built that relationship, you've built that rapport. So absolutely, I think that building relationships with other speakers is very, very beneficial. Plus, not to mention, like, it's not a zero-sum game, meaning like there's plenty of speaking gigs for everybody. You know, if you do a gig and I lose out on that gig, that doesn't mean that I'll never do that gig. And it also doesn't mean like I can't go get a different gig. You know, there's no one speaker who can speak at everything. And so there's plenty of room for everybody.
Excellent. And finally, I see the book, Successful Speaker. You might tell me a bit about it.
Yeah. So the book, The Successful Speaker, Five Steps for Getting Paid, Building Your Platform. And so it is basically like that five-step roadmap that we talked through earlier, that speak framework really goes through that in depth. And so if you're interested in, again, getting started, you just, I don't know what I don't know with speaking. I don't know. How do you find gigs? How much do you charge? Who do you speak to? Who hires speakers? Any of that. This is the book for you. So definitely check out the book. It's on a hardcover as well as ebook and Audible if you want to listen to the audiobook. So yeah, definitely check out The Successful Speaker.
Excellent. Listen, Grant, totally enjoyed our conversation. You might let people know how they can get in contact with you.
Yeah, everything we do is over at The Speaker Lab, thespeakerlab.com. If you listen to this podcast, you probably listen to other podcasts. And so we have a podcast, Roy, like you mentioned, called The Speaker Lab Podcast. We're coming up on 400 episodes. So we got a lot of content over there to check out. We also, one thing you mentioned that we didn't really have a chance to touch on was speaking fees. How much should I charge? And the answer is it depends. However, we put together a free speaking fee calculator. So if you want to check that out, you can go to myspeakerfee.com, myspeakerfee.com. It's totally free. Answer a couple of like multiple choice questions and it'll spit out a number to you at the end of what you should be charging as a speaker. And so it's a fun tool to play around with. If you have like, I just have no idea what to charge, go to that myspeakerfee.com, play around with that speaking fee calculator and see what it spits out at you.
Excellent. Yeah. No, brilliant. Listen, Grant, thank you very much.
Thanks, Roy.
So that's all for the Speaking Podcast. You can find all our episodes on speakingpodcast.com. As mentioned, we're on YouTube. You'll find the links in the podcast description. Be sure to give us a thumbs up, 5-star rating, and listen to Grant's podcast as well. Until next week, take care.